Good morning, good morning, good morning. I am so excited today. It is my Friday episode, and I tend to have a little bit more fun on Friday. And with the guests that I've spoke with backstage, I know this show is going to be amazing. I'm your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I'm bringing to you the Roundtable Talk Show. Now, I am going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. But while I'm introducing our guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to bother somebody. That's right. I said it. I said it is Friday. I need you to bother somebody. I need you to wake somebody up, text them, go knock on your neighbor's door, whatever you have to do, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. We're sharing so much information. Oh my God, I just don't want your friends mad at you. And they'll be mad if you tuned in and they didn't. So while you're sharing, I'm going to go ahead and introduce my first guest, and we're going to learn all about him, what he does, and who he is. I want to introduce Brian McMahon, and he is a serial entrepreneur. I'm always interested in speaking with serial entrepreneurs. They have the most interesting stories. He's also an investor. He owned companies in over 35 countries. Whew. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning. Another beautiful day in paradise.
Where's paradise? I'll be the judge of
Santa Monica. I'll
that.
take it. As a
Okay.
as an Irish boy who's come from cold beginnings, I'll call Santa Monica paradise.
I agree. I was going to give you anywhere in Southern California. Okay. I'm in Long Beach. So I'm like, okay, I'll take my little section of paradise if
Right.
that's what we're calling it. How are you today?
I'm awesome. I'm awesome. I'm over here in our accelerator, getting ready for the day to start. We invest in about 12 companies every quarter, and then we bring those companies in, and we bring them through a pretty rigorous 8-week program. And before that, would have all been in-house, and we would have had, 12 companies here, and founders, and jostling, and bustling, and all those wonderful things. And these days, a lot of it's virtual because we's in a whole different world, but we still get some visitors.
Yes. Now, okay. One of the things I love getting gold, right? Because a lot of times when I have guests on the show, they give information that I consider gold, but it's so everyday, average, ordinary for them. They don't even realize it's gold. One of the words that you mentioned was the word accelerator, and so often what happens is people decide they want to be a business owner. I have a dream. I have a vision. I want to create this business. Maybe I don't have enough seed capital to start my business, so I need to find other ways to make that money. So I go out and I look for investors, right? But with investors, typically, you don't just write that check. Now I know, for my company, as Sharifa, we may just get the check, but typically you go through a process. Which is what you're referring to as far as the accelerator. Would you explain that a little bit more in detail for us, please, Brian?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we look at around 1,000 companies every quarter. And they come from all over the world. We've one of the most diverse accelerators in America. We bring in companies from India. For this current cohort, we've two companies from India. We've got two companies from Africa, a company from Egypt, a company from Israel, a company from the UK, and a bunch of other countries as well. And we'll look through about 1,000 applications, and then we're looking for two or three things. We're looking for number one, just a big market. We want to make sure that it's a company that can really scale to high levels. Because if we're going to invest $100,000 into it, we're investing $100,000 in the hope that that company would become a big company in the future. It doesn't have to be a billion-dollar company, but you want the company to be worth many millions of dollars for us to be able to get a return back on it, especially based on the investment terms that we put in. And then, like, that breaks down to about eight companies, because we'll see eight or 12 companies, because we'll see 12 companies that have a huge vision. We'll see a team that have the ability to execute, and execution's really, really important for us. Like, many folks feel that they should follow their passion and follow things that they love. We don't actually really believe that. We believe that people should build skills and be exceptional at something, and then use that exceptionality to be able to then build exceptional execution skills. And when they have that, and only when they have that, do they have a chance of being able to do one of the most difficult things they'll ever do in their life, which is start a company. And there's a bunch of other stuff that's in the middle in between those cracks. But if we can see a great team that can execute, if we can see an idea whose time has come, then, you know, we'll take it to the next level where we then start looking at, you know, is the timing the right timing? Is this the right types of product to bring to the market? How hard is it going to be to scale and all those wonderful things? And then we begin.
Let's talk about packaging. When a person or a business owner, entrepreneur, company goes out looking for funding, is there a particular recommended strategy you have as far as how they package their company? Is it essential for them to have certain aspects in a business plan? Are you looking for certain business models? What are some of the strategies that a person can implement before they start the phase seeking in funding?
So I like that term you've used, packaging. Actually, I've not heard that before. For me, I equate that to brand, okay. Right? And look, investment is no different than finding a job or dating. If you look desperate and you look like you shouldn't be there, then the chances are that you probably shouldn't be there. If you have positioned yourself in a place where you focused on excellence and where you focused on being an exceptional founder and you focused on having a strong domain expertise in your industry and you focused on making sure that the skill sets that are required for you to be successful at the start, those gaps have been filled in. And then you spread the word around to enough people so people can see that you're going to work hard to get the name out there. Then what will happen is you make me want to date you. Like, that's the important thing. What you don't want to be is that person who's just saying, please, please, please choose me. You want to be that person who says, you know, I don't give a damn if Expert Dojo invest in me or not. There's like 20 Expert Dojos. If you're lucky enough, you get to invest in me as a company. And then you make us crawl after you. And that's the key. I really think it is. Like, all these tips and tricks about, you know, how do you get to investors? How do you get them to like you? Like, screw investors. This is about startups. And just be a beast of a startup. And then investors and everybody else in your world will want to be around you.
You know what? I applaud you, because I have never in my life heard it explained that way. Never. I've gone to accelerators. I started companies either for myself or with other people. And no one has said that. No one has said like the same example of you have to make it so you don't need us. You don't look desperate. So I think that's a wonderful mindset. And I think if you go into business with your focus, then the money will come. That's one of the things that I believe in. However, one of the things that I'm so passionate about is starting new businesses. I want to be a part of creating, you know, at least a million new businesses. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate is that I really believe that small businesses are the heart of America. And then when, you know, what happens when your heart stops? What do you have?
Oh, I agree. I agree. Number one, I think there's a cancer in America, which is actually the same industry I'm in, which is venture capitalism. I think entrepreneurship has been sucked out of America. We don't teach it in school, which is just awful. We don't really teach it in universities, which is tough as well. But the biggest problem is there's now so much money being pumped into companies like Uber and Lyft and even Amazon back in the early days, that the only thing we really create is unfair trading systems so that earlier stage entrepreneurs don't have a chance to be able to compete. So this is like a bigger and far wider conversation, but we are definitely facing an absolute crossroads of crisis in America. We were 100% the center of entrepreneurship in the world 50 years ago and 30 years ago, but that title has been taken off us by all of the usual suspects, the Chinas and everybody else out there. And we need to take grassroots and get it started again so that entrepreneurship is the first thing out of every kid's lips when they're born. And we groom them and we get them to be the best in the world again.
Hey, Brian, yes. To jump in real fast. Now you're talking about basically using your analogy. If you don't want the venture capitalists to go after you, they're going to go after you and you're going to get multiple people reaching out to you. Looking on the other side as a small business owner, what should they be asking the different venture capitalists to decide which one to go with?
So I'm kind of making two parallel points. One is that venture capitalism has broken entrepreneurship in America. Like now, to be a small company competing against large companies that have an unlimited amount of cash is just a joke. Like if you look at companies like Lyft and Uber, they've never ever made money. Like why do we use Lyft and Uber? We don't use them because they're this amazing, incredible app that like, it's the same thing as getting a taxi. It's just half the price and it's a different color car and the person's not trained. Oh, and we don't have as much safety. Like, so, but other than that, it is a venture capital subsidized company that hasn't made money in 10 years and has no ability to make money in the next 5 years, but it's just been subsidized. So as a small early stage business, your chances of competing with a lot of these large unicorns, and I could mention hundreds of them, like WeWork and Casper, and just a bunch more. Even Amazon lost $6 billion in its first 10 years in business. So like, I don't know about anybody else, but if I had $6 billion to waste, I think I could make a success in my company. So like on that one side of it, it's just a huge epidemic in America that people don't talk about. And it's a massive problem that we need to fix. And if we don't fix it, we will push all of the small businesses out of operation. And what we see, what we've seen happening in the high street over the last 10, 15 years will accelerate, and we will have no small business left. So that's the first point. The second point is when building a business, it's not something, look, I've lived in lots of different countries. America's my home, and I love everything about this now. But the thing I love most about is entrepreneurship. And when I look and see kind of what's happening with venture capitalists, there's this feeling that as a small company, the first thing we have to do is get investment. And that's not the way. The first thing we have to do is be educated about how to build a great company. And if we get educated on how to build a great company, and that includes everything, it includes the packaging, which was mentioned earlier on, it includes, which is your brand, it includes your product fit, it includes the structure that you're building your business. It's like the whole thing. And we need to learn that, and we need to learn how to scale, and we need to learn how to be able to compete so that we can even up what is already a very uneven playing field. And then what happens is this. Look, venture capital, angel money, my guess is, I mean, and look, we're connected probably with 20,000 other investors in America. Throughout America, there are no less than a million investors, a million and a half investors of different types. And I'll just give, I don't want to take up this whole conversation, but I'll give one really good example of a company that we have in here that have gone down a road, which just nobody thinks about. And it's, the company's called Woodpecker Web. They do legal services at 80% off the price by using very smart documents so that attorneys can do stuff quicker. It's as simple as that, right? But they went to the VCs and they hadn't built the venture capitalists, and they hadn't built the platform yet. We invested in them, but they went to the other venture capitalists, and the other venture capitalists said, no, you're too early, you're too early, you're too early. So then I was chatting to him. We went out for a run, and I'm like, how many clients have you got on his first part of his platform? He said 300. I said, why don't we just ring your clients one by one, and we tell them that we're going to give them a free upgrade on their account, plus we're going to give them access to clients, plus you're going to raise some money in your company because these are all the reasons why you believe this is going to provide them a really good return. And then we'll see what's come back. And we've spoken now to six of his clients, and three of them are investing $50,000 a pop. Right.
Wow. I love that. I'm raising $50,000 in my production fundraiser. I need to have some conversation about things I can do to raise that money. But again, I'm going to go to our next guest, but I just want to ask you this, Brian. I want your thoughts on this. You mentioned Uber specifically, and I don't know if you saw it, most likely you did, but Uber just took over Postmates. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that, I was, to me, and again, that's why I want your opinion, I felt kind of disappointed. I felt like, you know, okay, if Uber Eats owns Postmates, then there can, you know, really be no competition. I mean, yeah, you still may have Grubhub, or you still may have, I don't even know who else is out there. But if Postmates and Uber Eats are owned by the same people, then how can anybody come into that market?
So it's way worse than that. Look, venture capital is a Ponzi scheme. And it's been a Ponzi scheme since the beginning of time. And I'll give you like a really good example. I mean, so Uber Eats have lost money forever. Postmates have lost money forever. Uber have lost money forever. None of them have any potential to actually make money in the future. So it's kind of an irrelevancy on some level what any of these companies do, because they're part of the Ponzi scheme, which they've won already. And I'll just give you a real direct comparison. There's a company in the co-working space called WeWork. And then there's another company in the co-working space called Regus. WeWork with a venture capital darling, which means SoftBank pumped billions and billions of dollars into WeWork. And they pumped billions of dollars in the knowledge that the more money they pump into WeWork, the higher the valuation goes. The higher the valuation goes, the more money that gets pumped into them. Then they get rid of them on the public market. They get rid of all of their shares. And then the sucker public take over those shares and then buy in at a later price. WeWork's price was pushed in the private markets only because of SoftBank up to $40 billion. Now they were losing at one stage up to $5 billion in a year, including exceptional items, $5 billion in one single year. Now look at Regus. Regus, WeWork have got like 100 locations or 200 locations. WeWork had over 7,000 locations, a far more sustainable model. They make money in every single location. They make 30 or in every single region. They make 30% margins. They've given shareholders dividends for the past 15 years. And they only have a valuation of $2.5 billion, 10 times less than WeWork. Why? Because it's a Ponzi scheme. It's always been a Ponzi scheme, right from the beginning of time. And that's, if there's one thing that, I mean, forget, I don't care who politics and stuff, it goes backwards and forwards, and they're all a bunch of idiots in my mind. But when it comes down to what we really need to fix, we really need to fix the entire basis of entrepreneurship and how, which companies we allow to scale and how we actually support our system and not just a bunch of folks who are very rich.
Brian, you are preaching today. I feel like it's Sunday. I just want to shout, stand up, like, amen, hallelujah. Brian, do you have a podcast? Do you talk about this stuff aside from just in the accelerators? Because I want to tune in and learn more from you.
I did, and I'm going to shut up after this, but I actually did a TEDx talk about 5-6 years ago. And my talk was called The Kidnapping of the American Dream. And it was actually before we started off our accelerator. And the kidnapping of the American dream is about how American startup community is sexist, racist, elitist, and all of the ists, right? And I know there's a lot of talk right now about Black Lives Matters and everything else, but actually it goes way deeper. There's as much bias against women and minorities and Indians and, you know, lesbians, and like there's just bias against everyone who's not a 22-year-old blonde Harvard student. Okay. Yes. They're the only people who win. So I did that talk, and I was absolutely sure after I did that talk, and I got a reasonable amount of listens to it. I had probably 50 or 60 other investor friends at the time. And I was absolutely sure that like nobody would talk to me afterwards. And what happened was this: two things happened. Number one, I probably had 300 investor friends afterwards, and they just said, look, we don't wake up in the morning like that. Like, we don't wake up in the morning wanting to be idiots. We wake up in the morning wanting to do the right thing. But right now we have a very small pool to fish in, and we know that pool works. So you go out there, you build something, you give us better deal flow, and find us a way to get access to better entrepreneurs than we would normally go after, and then we'll change. So we did that. Like, we've invested now in 60 companies. We're investing in about 50 companies a year. We're the largest investors by deal number, in Southern California. And 80 to 90% of all of the people that we invest in would classify as minorities, and 40 or 50% would classify as women. And we did that a long time before like the current situation we're in right now. So look, I'll finish my little piece by saying, I have hope. I think we can enter into a really good world, and, you know, we have to eat this elephant in little bites, and we got to do it ourselves and help other really great people stand on our shoulders and become great themselves.
I like it. Start with the little bite. Start with Ash Sharifa, then we'll go from there. No, I had to just give you a little bit of time because I was learning, and I love to learn, and I agree. And again, I've never heard it explained that way, mentioned that way. You are fearless. I want to go ahead, since you already asked the question, I want to introduce you to my cousin. I love my cousin so much. My cousin, Vinny Enriquez, and he has a podcast. He does real estate. Vinny does so much, but he's always helping the small business owner, the entrepreneur. And so I want to introduce Vinny. Good morning, Vinny. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me on. Oh my gosh. Thank you for putting me right behind Brian.
Yes, I did that. I did that for a reason.
Gosh. I appreciate you having me on here. Yeah. So have a podcast. I mean, the idea of basically the podcast was in my business, in the real estate industry, it's a lot of false bravado. I think we have a lot of social media stuff out there, and you have a lot of false success stories. And so you only see basically the highlights of people's life. And being that I talk to a lot of people on a daily basis, I get to hear actually the sad moments. I get to hear about the basically the high moments, the low moments. And so I kind of wanted to tell those stories. And so that was kind of the idea of the podcast, Road to Growth. And that's how we actually originally met, talking about basically all the adversity, all the struggle. And I remember your story where you basically helped out someone for free, a company for about like a year or 2 years like that. And they let you go. And it was just like, and then you had to start your own business, start your own company. And like, it pushed you to want something better. And we always look at our own life just saying, oh, man, I have it so hard, but there's someone out there, I promise you, that has it harder than you.
Yes. Thank you for remembering parts of my story. So that was a good part. No, it was Punch TV Studios. We took the company public in an IPO. And I worked from 2013 to 2016 for sweat equity in the company and potential shares. And then we actually went public in 2016, did a capital raise from 2016 until 2018. And then March of 2018, I was laid off. I was let go when the money came in, even though we had started the company at the founders, the at my mom's kitchen table, me and the CEO of the company. And so from 2018 to 2020 is when I really started my entrepreneurial journey. But if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't have met you.
Exactly. I'm lucky enough to meet so many wonderful people like yourself through that, kind of putting myself out there in that. Me in the real estate field, I mean, I lucky enough, sold over about $100 million worth of inventory out there. So that was one of the things, but we only get to see people every 5 to 7 years. So that's usually when they're doing a transaction. And so I like to stay in contact with those individuals, and I wanted to find a way to tell their story and offer them kind of a, what else can I do besides basically just selling property for them?
Yes. But I think what's interesting about you, one of the reasons why we connected, because not only was I a guest on your show, you've been a guest on my show, I believe a couple of times. Yeah. And then for a short period of time, we co-hosted a show together. And one of the things that really intrigued me or interested me about you is that, just like Brian, you're not afraid to tell the truth. You're not afraid to say, this is what's going on. This is what we need to do. This is what we need to focus on. Whereas you have other people who just kind of tend to go with the status quo. And I saw you as someone who was unique, someone who was trying to help other businesses. And I wanted to continue to work with you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think when we did that, the show for a little while, you taught me, what was that word? It was like the woe or something. Oh, man,
woo.
There we go, the woo. I was like, I actually had to ask people after, I go, was Sharifa playing me? Is that actually a thing? And then I had to Google it. I was like, yeah, no, woo. Woo was a thing. So,
no, because we were doing our talk show and I always invite different guests. And at that point, I was really in my woo-woo stage where all my friends are psychics and channels and mediums and all this stuff. And so when I would request guests, we would come on and talk about all the woo-woo things, and Vinny's sitting there like, what is woo-woo? And I'm like, I thought everybody knew what woo-woo was. That's like a universal word. But one of the things I'm learning, especially in today's age, that everything is not universal. I have so many more questions. Go ahead, Vinny. You're about to say something.
Well, I was gonna say, as the other three people, we got Brian, Karen, Sunetta. Do you guys know woo-woo? Yes?
Of course.
Oh, see, we got two. We got one.
No.
See, Sharifa?
I'm just saying, I thought Karen knows, and I knew Sunita was going to know because it's the metaphysical. It's just another word when people say, like, weird. It's woo-woo. It's out there. You know what I mean? That's what people consider it, but it's fun. But Vinny, I'm going to come back to you. I know you have some questions for the other panelists, but I want to go ahead and bring Karen Tibbles into the conversation. Karen's it is she has the ability to work through conflict. She learned it a long time ago when she was going through it, but then she wrote a book to help other people with conflict. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah. No, I started my career in corporate America. And I'm Brian, I could talk to you for a long time about how corporate America interacts with VC companies and what's going on there, because there's a whole bunch of stuff there. But that's not what I want to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute, we need to hear this. I need to hear all this too. But another day, another show.
Another day. But what I did I was in marketing. I mean, everybody hates marketing, right? But what marketing really is trying to figure out how your product matches with what somebody else needs. And so I was a student of what people need and what's important to them. And I thought I knew really well these things. And You know, I do market research and do surveys and focus groups and stuff like that. And then I left that job and I went back to school and I went to seminary. Okay, yeah, I did. I did a conversion and I went back to seminary, went back to school. And I found this theory in seminary that just blew my mind, because it changed the way I thought about the way the world worked. And what I came to understand was that the decisions that people make that really mystified me, and we could talk about masks and that whole thing, all of that is based on their underlying value system, what somebody calls moral foundation theory, I call ethical zones. And it's stuff that's really, really important to us and that we fight wars over. I mean, we fight wars over this kind of stuff, but we don't talk about it and we don't recognize it in each other. But what I learned was that if we can recognize the things that are important to each other, we can then start to talk and we can get to a new place. And that's what I wrote the book about. And I'd love to talk more about it, or we can talk about corporate America interacting with VCs. But it was a great experience. And, you know, I learned this in seminary. And then I got out of seminary and I really started my entrepreneurial journey. Like, what do I do with this theory? And I just tried all these different things. And I really didn't like politics, but so I wrote the first book about marketing. and then, because that was really where I felt comfortable. But then I realized that we really need this book, talk about the timing being ready. We really need this book now to really help people understand what's going on, the people that whose behavior mystifies them, that they really don't understand why would they do that. Mm-hmm. And now when you read my book, you can understand.
Do you have a copy of the book?
I do.
You just so happen to have a book right there.
Persuade, Don't Preach,
Restoring Civility Across the Political Divide. Ooh, that is so timely. So what's Persuade, Don't Preach? What does that mean?
So preaching is when we talk and we don't take into account what the other person thinks. Mm-hmm. We just spew out whatever it is we think. And, you know, it comes from our own perspective. We don't think about the person we're talking to. We take a high moral ground and we yell. Mm-hmm. But this Aesop's fable of the wind and the sun, I think, is a great illustration. I don't know if you guys know this fable, but the wind and the sun decided to see who was the most powerful. Mm-hmm. And the way they were going to judge it was, could they get the traveler to take off their cloak? Mm-hmm. The wind goes first and it blows really, really hard. And so the traveler just holds on to their cloak really tightly. And that's what happens when we preach. People hold on to what they're thinking really tightly, and we don't change anybody's mind. The sun came out next and shone really brightly and warmed up the earth, and the traveler decided to bask in the sunlight and took off their cloak. So which was the more powerful? I think the sun's more powerful. And that's what the persuading is. The persuading is when you listen to the other person, you understand what's going on with them, and then you do something called reframing, where you take what's important, you take what you're trying to say, take your issue, and you put it in terms that they can understand. And then they'll listen to you and you change your mind. And it's not just my idea, okay? This isn't just something I came up with, okay? This is something that's based on this theory from social psychology called moral foundation theory, or political psychology called moral foundation theory. And then another person who's done something called moral reframing. So I've got loads and loads of examples of times that it's been used in research or times it's used in real life. Some examples that I give when I give my talk, and I'm giving a talk next week, next Thursday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time. You can sign up on my website where I'm gonna talk about some other examples. But one of the best examples is gay rights. Mm-hmm. So the gay rights campaign, decided to focus on gay marriage. Now that was a really tough decision because they were focused on a lot of other things, but with the AIDS epidemic, marriage became much more important. But it wasn't, everybody didn't decide, and yes, this is a great thing. There was a fight about it, but they focused on gay marriage. And by doing so, they chose a hot button for the conservatives of marriage, which was sacred, but they did it in such a way that they didn't upset them. And what happened is that the attitudes over 15 years from 2004 to 2019, so 15 years, the attitudes flipped. The Pew study shows that approval went from of gay marriage went from 31% to 61% approved of gay marriage in that 15 years. That's never happened before in our lifetimes. It's never happened. But it's because they understood who they were talking to, they understood how to talk to them, and they used that. So I think that's an example of how you can use this kind of technique. They didn't do it as a technique. They didn't know that I was doing this. I studied it afterwards and found out that they had done it. And I think it's a great example.
Mm. So you mentioned it's on your website. Yes. What is your website address?
www.persuadedontpreach.com.
Oh, we got the persuadedontpreach.com website. I am impressed. Now, what's one of the things that I have found since I launched this show the 30th of March is that no matter how diverse my guests are, I always see a common theme. And in each of you, I see people who are trying to bring information that will help us all. Like if we have that information, if we have that knowledge, if we think about it a different way, then we can make a difference in our lives, and making a difference in our lives allows us to make a difference in humanity. And so I've been focused on that. That's one of my primary focuses, but it's something that I'm happy that we're starting more of these conversations. But I will come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest, she may not be woo-woo, Vinny, but she's magical. I can tell you that right now, because when I met this lady, okay, let me tell you something. Usually when I meet people, I may be like impressed or blown away. But when I had her on a show, all my guests, the other four guests was like, who is she? She has a special gift, a special talent, and she's going to share it with us right now. And that is her personality. But her business is, she is a serial entrepreneur as well. She speaks with business owners. She has a radio show, which is CRS, Caribbean radio show. She's calling in from the Middle East, and she doesn't just have a radio show. She doesn't just have a podcast. She doesn't just have a video cast. She has 2.4 million listeners, right? So, Sunita Shannon, talk to them, Sunita. Show us that magic.
Hey, everyone. This is your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, bringing it to you from Caribbean radio show, the Knowledge Station. I bring you guys happy happies from the Middle East, where it is sunset over here, and it is a chilling 121 degrees today. How you doing?
I never heard 121 degrees be described as chilling, but somehow the way you did it, I believed it. It was like cold. I'm like, wait a minute, 121 degrees? Is she all bundled up?
Well, thank goodness that the AC is working, so I won't complain. Yes, the Caribbean radio show is located in Jamaica with a platform that allows people to share businesses and their ideals on my show. It's every Freedom Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where I get an opportunity to host business owners, give them that platform of those 2.4 million listeners to let people know about their brand, to actually pivot in a different way, because traditional businesses in brick and mortar and not getting out and using social media is quite archaic. So this journey has been so amazing that every day is miraculous things, like meeting the people on the panel today. So many people have come on the show or through reconnecting with people that have television stations, television shows. So to actually share these resources with one another, I feel more empowered myself by empowering others every day.
It's so beautiful. What do you think of our other three guests?
Ryan, philanthropy, I thought was a lost art. To hear that there are people who look at women and minorities and are actually supportive out there, being an active voice when no one else is in the room. I applaud you, Brian, for everything that you're doing, not just being a talker, but truly, my brother, you are someone who is an exceptional person who's out here doing. I thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and I just look forward to hearing more about the campaigns and the success. It's not Shark Tank. You didn't give us that impression. You gave us the impression of someone who's truly a philanthropist at heart, meeting the needs of a people. I'm wondering about drop shipping. So we're going to talk about that in a second, Brian.
Can I just clarify? I am not a good person. I don't do this because I believe that, you know, women deserve special treatment, our minorities expect special treatment. I do it because, number one, women are statistically more successful than men in early stage startup. It's just a fact. Like, it's not my fault that most of the people are just not that smart, you know, and they haven't worked it out. And, you know, us as investors, when we come in and we say, okay, great, where's the opportunity? The opportunity, like, you show me. Imagine if somebody said to you that you could have an employee who is better qualified than everyone else, who probably worked harder in university, who probably cares more. And I'm generalizing a lot, but the facts all back it up. And nobody else wanted that employee because of a bunch of BS reasons that just go back generations and mainly are based on bias. Like, you'd be like, hallelujah, bring it home. So that's all I did. Like, we just opened up the gates here. You know, I will tell you, we have one African-American founder who is the most successful ever. Core. He just raised like $3 million last week. We have another African-American founder at like a 10 million valuation, one of the best cybersecurity solutions in the market. Nobody else looked at him, but it was a no-brainer for us. Like, we have another one in this current cohort, Jeff, in Maven's list, who's just raised $1.4 million at a valuation of $25 million. And he raised it all in the last 3 or 4 weeks. We got Michael over at Cloud9, other African-American founder in the current cohort, who's got a $250,000 contract from Bank of America, which will probably grow to a $50 million contract. We got Chase over at Champions League. They've just raised like $700,000. We got the two ladies from Potley, both two Asian-American ladies who've got the most beautiful brand you've ever seen in the cannabis space. So, like, these are all no-brainers for me. Like, who's going to win in the cannabis space? Like, a bunch of crotchety old men, a bunch of crotchety old white guys who are up in the mountains somewhere generating cannabis that they've been doing for 30 years and 3/4 of that time illegally, are 225 or 227-year-old Asian American women who build the most beautiful brand you've ever seen. If you look at Potley, like, it speaks about health and education and Parkinson's. It doesn't speak about like just rolling up a spliff. Do you still call them spliffs?
I don't know.
anyway, I just want to clarify to people out there, it's like, this is not, this becomes successful not because we choose a demographic and say, we should do the right thing by you. It becomes successful when we recognize already awesome people who are doing incredible things.
Brian, that was a wonderful speech. You didn't change our minds, though. We believe that you're a good person. So we're going to go with that.
That's right, Brian. Keep up the good work.
Sunita, go ahead. I wanted to hear your thoughts on Karen and Vinny.
Yes. Vinny, as far as real estate is concerned, this is the best time that I'm hearing for everyone on the planet. So I love the fact that you already have a platform out here for people to communicate with. I'm hoping that we can get together and do a podcast together. Just one session, if you could come on my show and share this information with people. All too often, people are sitting there and renting. I myself, being in the Middle East, am fortunate to be a contractor. I don't know what rent and utilities is. So people need back home, I suggest that you contact Vinny. You listen to these shows. This information is out there. This is the optimum time. Look at history between what Brian is telling us about technology and what Vinny is bringing home to us. We know that when times are critical and worse, it is the best time for businessmen. Let's get together as a collective. Let's listen to these podcasts. Let's branch out with a minority sister and a minority brother, white guys, black women, all together sharing the information. Because when you look at what's going on in race, you look at what's going on in politics, it's only when Vinny and Sharifa got together before all this happened that was a solution that we always needed as Americans.
Karen.
I want to cut you off real quick, Sunita, before you go on to Karen. Thank you. That was beautiful. And again, that's why I wanted to have that conversation with Vinny. But it's also one of the reasons why I launched my third talk show, which is Face to Face Talk Show, which airs Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Facebook.com/I Like Sharifa. And my co-host is Paul Foss. And Paul is a Jewish guy in New York City, white guy. I love Paul. Paul is amazing. But the reason I launched this show is because on the roundtable talk show, when everything started happening with the civil unrest, I didn't want to offend people. You know, I didn't want to put business owners and entrepreneurs and authors in a position to have to answer questions about politics and religion or their belief. And because we were all taught, at least I was, you don't discuss politics and religion in mixed company. But there were people who were like, you should discuss this, you should talk about this. And so I created a platform where we can sit down face to face to discuss race in an honest, open conversation. So each show, there are about seven people Wednesdays at 10. And all we do is focus on what's going on in America. So I just want to go ahead and add that in and go ahead with Karen.
Man, I'll definitely have to show up on Wednesdays today. Yes. Sounds like my cup of tea.
Yeah, I'm going to send you the invite.
Thank you, Miss Karen. I went to graduate school for behavior modification, so I salute you with taking well-known evidence, not just theories, and putting it in self-actualization and sharing it with the world. All too often, people aren't having these conversations to be able to shift the behavior and see what's going on innately and actually share and heal. Everything about your book and preaching, you know, it brings out the rebellious nature of knowing that people really don't gravitate towards someone trying to, you know, woo-woo-woo me into doing anything. But that straightforwardness, I commend you on giving us behavior modification in this time, because right now, mental health is first aid. So your book has a timing that on a global level we need.
I think that was so beautiful. And that's why I want to hear your thoughts on everyone. I mean, that's why you have 2.4 million listeners. That's why 2.4 million people tune in to hear what you have to say. Because for each guest, you pointed out so many aspects of what they had to say in such a beautiful way. So even our listeners will be like, okay, yeah, I want to speak to them. That was interesting. I like what they had to say. So thank you for that, Sunita. I want to go back to Karen real quick because I have a question. And this is just an observation. It may be right. It may be wrong. I don't know. But are you someone who has experienced a lot of conflict in your own personal life and have felt that because of those situations, you want to teach people some aspect of how to deal with conflict differently? Because when I saw you speaking, what came to my mind is some situation and it's irate and people are yelling and mad. And then Karen walks in and it's like, no, you're like, you have that calming, like, no, we don't have to do this. Am I wrong, Karen? Am I like way off?
Well, I used to run from conflict.
Okay.
What I've learned is, so I'm like one of those like really people who think a lot.
Is that the thinking hair move? Is that why Einstein's hair looks like that? He's like, ah!
And I go away and I think and I think and I think and I think, and then I come back and go, oh, I see what the answer is. Mm-hmm. So I'm that person that I'm going to prepare and I'm going to, you know, so I've learned how to help prepare other people because the more I've studied what's going on, the more what's going on is predictable to me. Mm-hmm. So now I can go, oh, well, that's what my book does. It takes, oh, here's the conflict that's going on. And, you know, you don't know why what's going on is why it's happening. But here I can tell you why it's going on. And here I can give you strategies for things you can think about. Mm-hmm. And then when I try to do what I hope to do, I haven't done it yet, is I have a workshop, set of workshops starting on August 5th, my birthday.
Happy birthday.
where I'll work with people to train them on how to deal with the situations. So how to think about the situations differently and how to apply it in such a way that they have tools and they don't get frozen the way I was or go away hurt. You know, because this stuff is really painful. It is just so painful. and, you know, talking about race and religion and politics and all that stuff. And it's all goes down to what we fundamentally believe at our core. And if we feel like the other person doesn't get us, then we're never going to solve it. But if we can start to feel like the other person understands what's going on, then we can maybe start to agree on the issues. We still may have that conflict, but we maybe start to agree on the issues.
I think that's important.
Karen sounds like a life coach.
Yes, she does. You know, I was noticing that when Karen was speaking, but it was interesting. And this is not a knock against Karen, but I could have Karen as a life coach, because I'd be like, don't you get mad or frustrated? Are you always this calm? Are you always this perfect? Like, I need you to respond, react, something. Karen's just like, no, calm down. Let's discuss it like mature adults. I'm like, ah, I want to yell. I don't know. That's just
run away. I run away, go yell, and then I come back.
Okay. That's what we have to do. See, I'm learning. I'm learning, because that calm, like, it, you know, my dad's from New York, you know, that whole side of the family. That's one of the things that we always talk about, is that people communicate in different ways. So because my dad's family was in New York, and, you know, they lived in the project, you walk by, you hear people yelling and screaming, and it's like, oh, they're having an argument. It's like, no, that's Sunday dinner. You know what I mean? It's just the way people communicate, you know. And then there are other people who get very nervous if you raise your voice. It doesn't matter what you're saying or but if your voice raises, they're like, oh, you know. So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Vinny, you got a bad temper, Vinny?
I'm half Mexican, so yeah. I keep it under control. I mean work out and do activities to basically to get frustration out during the day. I think we all deal with some kind of frustration. I have to find an outlet for it.
Yes, but you're usually calm. But you're not calm to where I don't think you're true with your feelings. You are someone who motivates a team. I want you to just say hi to your entire team. Your entire team is great. I love them. I'm pretty sure at least one of them are tuning in to watch the show, because where Vinny goes is like this whole group shows up. But you use your energy and your passion to motivate people to get real estate, to change their lives. And what I love is that you don't just post. I see people with, you know, post the link. Oh, I work for this real estate company. Come buy a house. You do very few, you know, posts about specifically purchasing it. You focus more on the story, what you're doing, sharing the journey. You do a lot of videos, you know, about the houses and not just the sale, if that makes sense, because that's what I noticed about you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes from the idea that there's things that I look at negative in real estate. I mean, I think there's a lot of, if you believed based off of what people post on Facebook, you would think there'd be million dollar real estate agents all over the place, but really that's not the case. And so when I look at what I'm going to post, I want to be as real as possible to give kind of, you know, who I am and what the story was. And also too, the story of why someone decided to sell, decided to buy, whatever it might be, is going to actually trigger a thought in someone else's head of why they should do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, because I've asked just about every person who comes on and talks about real estate, the same exact question. And I get 99 different responses to the same exact question. There are people who will tell you right now, COVID-19, 2020, this is the worst possible time in history to buy. Then you have the same environment where people tell you this is the perfect time to buy. Like, I had one guy I asked the question to, and no judgment, but he just so happened to be in Las Vegas, and he was like, buy now, everything's cheap, buy low. And I'm like, okay, all right. He was like, you can get it on pennies on a dollar. So what are your thoughts, Vinny?
So I do a little bit of coaching about basically, you know, NLP and that kind of stuff, right? And so when you're talking to someone and they ask you, right, is now a good time to buy? I go, yeah, it's a fantastic time to buy. What are you looking to do? And then you dive deeper into what they're doing and then find a reason why they should be able to buy now. There's always a reason. There's always a way to use the numbers to tell a story of why you should do it now. I mean, the easiest idea is to focus on the monthly payments. I mean, if you want to look at the so-called positives of buying right now, it's basically the lowest interest rates we've had for a very long time. So even though the prices are you know, at least in San Diego, we're at the affordability index around like, 17, 18%, somewhere around there. And it's usually a downward trend around 16%, but we've seen that 17, 18% over the last couple of years. And because values have gone up, but interest rates have kept going down. So if you look at the monthly payments, you actually be having lower monthly payment today than you would have if you bought before COVID. I mean, for at least in San Diego County. So that's the positive of it. Now people go, okay, well, the offset of it, the values are so high, we're going to have to see basically the downward trend coming up sooner or later, right? Because we always see like a change in the market every 10 years or so. So we're craving that change. The tough part about it, we currently in San Diego County have more properties under contract than we do actually have on the market as a whole. So it gives you an idea basically how low inventory we have in San Diego County. So it's going to take a little while. We're seeing forbearances and things like that still play out for foreclosures. So we're going to get a better idea of where the market's going to go end of the year. Yet no one has a crystal ball. If they say they have a crystal ball, they're probably lying to you. So
I have a crystal ball.
Well, you're probably lying to me.
I can't see it. I can't read it, but I've been in the rose quartz. I bought this rose quartz necklace last night, and then I bought this ball, which is a rose quartz, and it's a crystal, and then I put it on this little gold thing to hold it. And if I had known psychically that we were going to discuss this, I would have had it handy. But my woo-woo psychic telekinesis powers weren't working, I guess, this morning, Vinny. You know what? Brian, how do you handle conflict?
So, you know, as you get older in life, you realize that it's a real life suck. So I just don't anymore. Look, there are things that are important to me. I used to think that the world should change to adapt to me. And then you go through enough countries and you go through enough years and you realize that, you know, life is tough, but you can find real joy if you can find real purpose in what you're doing. And if you find purpose in what you're doing, then your attitude changes and you start moving to a place of, you know, if other people can find that purpose, then they're fortunate. And, you know, we try and guide them to that place if we can. And then if other people can't find that place, then it's okay. I mean, sometimes it's about timing. Sometimes just people aren't in the right place to be able to see. So I'll guarantee you in my personal little mission of, you know, of being a part of making entrepreneurship the central, I want everyone in America to be an entrepreneur. Like I want every 11-year-old kid to realize that rather than playing games, that they can learn how to start off their lemonade stand. My kid's like 13, and he just interviewed actually, and she's an African-American girl, and she started off a company when she was 5. I don't know if you saw this girl. She met Obama and everybody else, and her brand is in 1,900 stores across America, and she's like 12 years old. So I'm not necessarily advocating for everybody becoming a huge business person when they're young, but I'm advocating for everybody becoming just really knowledgeable about how to take control of their own lives. I think working for somebody sucks. I really do. I think it's just the worst thing on the planet. It's an evolved slavery because you'll never, ever be free. You will always be a captive of healthcare costs, of college fees, of just life that's just going to beat you in the face every single day. And the only way you got a chance of breaking through is to be able to build something of yourself. And you can start it when you're 40 or 50, and that's brilliant if you can do that, but you've got less time, right? And you got more commitments, so it's more difficult. So if you can start it when you're 19, 20, 22, 23, and you can then build up a nice life savings, you don't need billions of dollars. You actually need $11.2 million. And then for the rest of your life, you never have to work again. And then you can get involved in purpose and you can get involved in great things. So it's not exactly your question, but my answer is that not everybody will be ready for that story today, but there will be a time in everyone's life when they are ready for that story. And sometimes you just got to put out what you believe. You've got to do it. I love what Karen said. I think it's 100% right. If you try and tell someone why they should understand something differently, they will fight you because every part of their DNA tells them that they have to do that. But if you help them understand how it can make their life easier and better and how it can make the world better and how they can be a part of it, then they may not get it today and they may not get it tomorrow, but they should get it in the future. Or you will learn something from them, and then you will adapt, you being me, will adapt, you know, kind of how we feel about it. So Yeah, just I think we just all need to chill a little more and not fight so much, and just actually focus on living better lives that are filled with more purpose that we enjoy, because it's a hell of a lot easier.
Mm, I love it.
Brian.
Now everybody wants to talk. Go ahead, Tanita.
Brian, I don't know if you have an African-American female sitting on your board, but call her up, get Sharifa, and call myself up so that we can keep this ball rolling, okay? To hear you say that reminds me of a guest on my show. This young man is actually retiring in August at the age of 31. Entrepreneur, well over the $11 million that you asked about. So to hear these stories and to know that someone else out there is really pushing for people to be self-sustainable, because at the end of the day, that's what we need in order to not be codependent. May all everyone who's working out there just start to say, I'm weaning myself from working from someone else, and just get the LLC, get the business started. That's what I want to say. Thank you, Brian.
Oh, you got it. We don't have a board. And we don't have a board because they wouldn't let me say any of this stuff. But we do have a staff of 6 people, and 5 of them are women.
Okay, well, we're gonna come over there and help somehow. That's the whole point.
Because again, I'm not silly. I know with good people. No, look, you evolve in life, right? If you'd have spoken to a 20-year-old Brian, it would have been a different answer. I would have been all fight and glory and, you know, and beat my way through. But you get to a place in life where you want to enjoy all the wonderful parts of it. And that includes all of the people too.
Absolutely. Vinny, you were gonna say something?
Yeah, I was gonna say, talking about your idea of conflict, how do you overcome conflict? I mean, it's something I think Karen might have said, or basically, in essence, you just take it to a higher level, right? So if you're talking to a person and they're saying, well, I don't like this restaurant or whatever it is, right? Then you go, okay, what do you think about the town? Oh, I don't know if I like the town. Okay, what do you think about the city? Okay, what do you think about the county? You're gonna get to a point where you're at the same level where they're actually happy at that point, and then you can actually kind of dive deeper into it. But I think at the core, for most people, when we're having all these conflicts, with political conflicts and everything like that going on, at the core, people want the same thing. People are good. It's now, how do you help other people out is basically where we're fighting at.
I agree with you, even though Brian said he wasn't a good person, but I didn't agree with Brian at that point. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live and everyone who's watching in the archives, and just simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we are going to start with you, Karen.
Great. So plug my book again, Persuade, Don't Preach, the website persuadedontpreach.com. You can sign up for a free introductory webinar next Thursday, and I'll be having them periodically, where I go over the concepts and what's behind the book. And I really hope to transform the way we talk to each other.
I think you just have. I mean, just starting the conversation is the first step. So I definitely hope everyone goes and checks out your book. Brian, what do you have for us?
So just wake up this morning, shake it off, rather than do what you usually do, which is go on autopilot for the next 8 or 9 hours until you get home and watch a Netflix movie. Actually, just look around you and find a problem in the world that needs to be fixed, and then work out the skill set that you can actually build to actually be a big part of fixing that problem. And then you set on a new journey. It doesn't mean you give up anything. Don't leave your job. Don't do anything silly, but set out in a journey to create real purpose and leave a legacy behind you, which involves all kinds of wonderful things. And you do that, and I'll be a very happy person.
I think that's great. You mentioned something when you said, don't quit your job. It's one of the things that happened to me. They come talk to me, you know, I'm supporting their vision, their dream, focusing on being an entrepreneur. And they come back and they're like, I did what you said, Sharifa. I'm like, what? I quit my job. I'm like, no, that's not what I said. I didn't say go and quit your job. What I said was, let's work on you becoming an entrepreneur. So I understand exactly what you were saying, Brian. Vinny, what do you have for us?
If you're right now thinking to yourself, I need to get out of this rut, or I need a game plan, I need to basically purchase a home in San Diego, or just I'm just having a bad day, I mean, feel free to reach out. Go to the podcast, Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur, or look at the website, www.venricusgroup.com. I mean, I'm all about basically building a game plan for where you want to get to.
I think that's beautiful. When I'm having a bad day and maybe I'm just a little lonely, I'm just going to call and talk to you at 3 a.m. How's that?
Oh, my phone's busy. Sorry about that.
Oh, you got jokes this morning, Cousin Benny. Sunita, go ahead and take us on out.
This is your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, with CRS Radio Station, the Knowledge Station. Every Freedom Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want to leave you guys with this. If you know five people with wisdom, like the people on this show, you're bound to be the sixth. Make sure that you get yourself into networking with people who are going places. Get the assets, call Vinny. Get the mental health check for this girl that you need. Right here is Miss Karen. And always know that Brian is here to help you build, brand, and make sure that you get to that point of self-sustainability. Until next time, when you need Miss Asharifa, need anything, Asharifa. I'll see you next week, girlfriend.
Oh, I'm so excited. I told y'all that girl was magic. Y'all didn't believe me. Y'all didn't see it, but I was like, Sunita is going to bring the magic, the smile, the knowledge, the wisdom. And not to mention all those 2.4 million viewers, we need those too. But I just want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode, Friday's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I definitely appreciate you all, but I appreciate everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching the show in the archives. I know sometimes you can't tune in at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, but if you go and watch it later in the day, I definitely appreciate your support. And just because you watched it at noon and not at 8, doesn't mean we still don't need you to share the show. Continue to share the show, spread the love, share the message. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a happy, safe, blessed weekend. Bye now.